Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. Bill Russell, I, Paula. We are so pleased to be with Kevin Phillips. We live in a democracy. We say that a lot in the United States. Government of, by, and for the people. Well, you would think that people who get pensions and Social Security would be part of that mix. But when there is this kind of a tremendous push to take significant sectors of our the people and cheat them, how else to put it? That's what you're talking about with this diddling with the numbers, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. One of the effects of what happened between, let's say, 1978 and 1982, when inflation really got out of control, out of hand, was the financial markets took a terrific bath, and politicians who were in office took another terrific bath, and both decided they didn't like it very much. And one of the ways to deal with future inflation was to change the definitions. Now, some of that, you could argue that some of it was seriously intended, but some of it was simply designed to make certain that the government wouldn't have to pay for levels of inflation that would be very painful, and that they could redefine it somewhat lower so that the public could pick up the tab and that Social Security wouldn't rise as inflation warranted, neither would pensions, and neither would cost of living increases. And several of the people involved in being very angry at all of this have gone so far as to say that your Social Security for somebody who retired, let's say, back in the 80s might actually be about 50% higher now if there'd been legit, fully straightforward numbers. And the other
somehow
thing,
that feels like we're screwing the American people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But in terms of the some of the ingredients that went into it, it's not just there are a lot of little technical things, and they make interesting discussion, but
and people can read that in the book, and yeah, the bigger picture is
they take too long to discuss. But one of the things they did after the big run-up in the price of housing in the late 70s and early 80s is they redefined the CPI to get rid of the cost of home ownership, and they shifted to something that was owner's equivalent rental. And this basically ducked all the ingredients that would make it expensive as home prices were rising and all the cost of taxes and so forth, that escaped. And they went to this homeowner's equivalent rent. Now, one of the experts said that this allowed them to really keep inflation below what it should have been, say, in 1984, 85, 86. And that allowed and made it possible for a lot of these real estate speculations to take off because they had lower interest rates than they should have. And nobody was paying attention to what was coming down the pipe. But some say that you had, because you had this same understatement of homeowner inflationary impact in the last decade, that it made possible a good part of the housing bubble, which we're now paying such a huge price for, because it really understated the inflation involved.
And if you understate inflation sufficiently and drop interest rates enough, essentially you end up with negative interest rates, which is a powerful, it's like jet fuel to the kinds of financial speculation you're talking about.
Yes, and we actually have at this point negative interest rates being charged to the financial types that got in trouble who were borrowing at the Fed window, because they're borrowing at 2.5% when even by the government's number we have something like 5% inflation, and we probably really have 6 to 9, and these clowns who wasted and threw away all this money on stuff that's boomeranging are being given below inflation interest rates that are in essence being subsidized.
So we're paying for what they've done to us again.
Well, we in the loose sense taxpayers, but future generations as well, because a lot of the money is being borrowed.
Well, and it's being borrowed. It's, you know, an awful lot of this is, and this is a whole other section, you know, concept of your book that ties into the oil. An awful lot of this is being financed by China, by Japan, by Saudi Arabia, by Russia, in varying ways, either in a lot of different ways. And for a long time, we've assumed, because we were a reserve currency, we never had to pay any of this back. Mm. And that's, you know, it's not written anywhere that I'm aware of that the dollar is necessarily forever a reserve currency, and it's not written anywhere that someday the Chinese, for example, might want their money back.
Well, it's not by accident you call it bad money, reckless finance, failed politics, and a global crisis of American capitalism. It's that global part that, in addition to the local problems of which you're speaking, that makes it all much more serious.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, the United States in its heyday was the world's leading creditor nation. It loaned as opposed to borrowed. It was the world's leading manufacturing nation and world's leading manufacturing exporter and the world's leading producer of oil. We are now the world's leading debtor. We are now the world's leading importer of oil. And we are now the world's leading importer of manufactured goods. All of this requires massive lending from abroad and toleration of all of our games. And at this point in time, it's clear that the dollar is dropping even more rapidly than it has in any of the previous 6 or 7 years. But the dollar is down 50% against the euro since 2001.
Well, and then you add the massive disrespect that America has earned from the rest of the world. It's not like, and they're going to take care of us because they like us.
No, they're going to take care of us in a different way because they don't like us. Well, I think that's the danger.
Well, in Europe particularly, I mean, we've seen it with this with the subprime debt. We have fleeced them with the financial instruments we've been selling them. And it's hard to imagine that they're particularly amused by that.
Oh, I don't think they are, because a lot of American brokerage firms figured that they can take these things that nobody could understand, and even if their salesmen didn't understand them, they could take their AAA rating and sell them to the Second National Bank of Schleswig-Holstein or something. And, of course, they got them, and they trusted the ratings, and they trusted the American brokerage firms. And you made a big mistake if you trusted the American broker-dealers or the American ratings firms. So we've just taken a huge black eye on top of the very well-deserved black eye in Iraq, in my opinion, which basically wound up quintupling the price of oil. So it's like being in a shark tank and all these things are circling. I mean, we've got housing prices collapsing. We've got debt building up like never before. We've got oil going over the moon and the dollar committing currency side.
So. And in fairness, it's not just the little bank in, let's say, Munich. UBS, a huge international Swiss bank, has taken massive hits from these various games. I think part of it was because they were so active in the American market, they began to drink the Kool-Aid and started believing, because they were probably selling this stuff as well.
It's coming out that a lot of them, not so much in Asia, but some even there, but a lot in Europe, and the Germans and the French and the British in particular. The British run a sort of mortgage culture like we do and speculate in housing. And the British are being nailed for essentially the shared Anglo-American speculative finance. But the French got involved too in the money markets that were money market funds that were drawn into question in August were in BNP Paribas in Paris. So the French were in there, the Germans were in there, the British. It's really Western capitalism.
And you're talking about a time when so many things are in flux anyway, as you look at things like resource wars around water, as well as oil, as well as desertification all over the world and global climate change. So it's not like today we're going to look at this and fix this. We're looking at awesome trends.
This is at least systemic.
Well, and there is no way of telling where all this stuff will fall out, as it were.
Well, it depends on how perfect the perfect storm is. What we see at this point is the ingredients of a perfect storm if things go poorly, because you've got this unprecedented mountain of debt that's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa sort of over the American economy. You've got housing prices in this country will collapse more than anywhere else. You've got the whole question of oil and the extent to which the U.S. has to buy 2/3 of its oil overseas. That's $400 billion a year. That's putting huge pressure on the dollar. We do need the oil because we're incapable of working out an energy policy. Even the energy companies and the oil companies say, let's have a strategy, but we have the only country in the world that's run president and vice president by two former oil industry executives. We have been better off hiring a good humor man to run energy policy. And then
there might have been one.
Well, yeah, I mean, Bush maybe should have been a good humor man, but in any event, the point is that you've got oil people running the United States, and our oil prices get quintupled during this period. And the dollar is now coming in like a kamikaze.
Well, and as the dollar goes down, oil prices go up.
Exactly.
And if the Saudis, for example, decide that they don't want to be paid in dollars anymore, the dollar goes further down, which means oil becomes even more expensive. This is a less than virtuous cycle.
Absolutely. And Paul Volcker, the former Fed chairman, predicted that he would assume that the OPEC would go to a basket of currencies within a few years, that they would not continue to sell in dollars.
And the reason is obvious. If you know, why would you take dollars when you know they're dropping in value? I mean, it's almost impossible to believe that the dollar can hold up at its current level against any either resource-rich or developed economy.
Well, see, one of the things that has protected the dollar, I know that doesn't make sense, but that's that the rival currencies at this point, you have the euro, which doesn't really exist. Those countries are not merged. They're just united in a European Union. And the biggest financial center in Europe is not part of it, London, and they don't have any military capacity, and we can at least protect people, sort of.
So, well, it's not clear that we can do that.
No, but I suppose if they invaded Canada, the Canadians can figure, and the Saudis certainly think that we'd protect them. We tell them that 20 times a year. That's a factor. But the dollar is so weak that gold and oil have gone up a lot more than the euro. So the euro is bound by the limitations of Europe. The yen by the limitations of Japan. But gold is not tied to a particular country, and neither is oil. So they're free to go up at a much higher rate. And I think they actually have become cryptocurrencies at this point.
Which also, I would assume, would tend to drive up the price of oil, since people are probably speculating in oil futures, because that is about as secure a place to put your resources, cash, as is currently available. It's speculative, but where else do you turn?
Well, the funny thing is, we forget that commodities have been currency in the United States before. You go back to the 18th century, and people could pay taxes in the Carolinas in buckskins. That's where the buck came from. So it's not as if the whole thing is new.
One of the many things to learn from Captain Phillips is where the buck came from as we watch it plummet.
But where does it stop?
Oh, well, we'll see in just a moment. I'm sure you have all the answers, I hope. Kevin Phillips comes with much from which we can learn and never presumes to have those answers, only gives us opportunities to think more clearly and deeply about those real challenges that we are facing at the moment and continue to look at the conversation at what can be done about it. Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, Kevin Phillips, speak with us when we return, please.